Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 123 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you on a Tuesday night this time around for obvious reasons. And joining me on the podcast this week is the great Scott Coleman. What's up, man?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure, sir. It's been too long. I took a week off, and then, of course, we delayed this week because earlier today, on Tuesday, as we're recording, was the trade deadline, so it seemed pretty silly to record a podcast on Sunday. Hopefully, everybody sort of heard that announcement last week. I tweeted about it, too. Hopefully, nobody was screaming at me about not having a podcast in their feed on Sunday night, so hopefully, it makes sense that we would wait. There's, of course, the trades to talk about. We'll definitely talk about them here in a little bit, but there was a little bit of news. I don't want to spend too much time on results and things that have happened. The Braves are playing this evening, or at least they're scheduled to play this evening on Tuesday, with Colby Allard set to make his major league debut, but rain has been in the forecast all day. It's been pouring rain, so the game is currently scheduled. By the time you're listening to this, you might know if it's been canceled or postponed or whatever actually happens with that game, but we're not going to know what happens on Tuesday night. So with that in mind, let's just talk about some new stuff, and then we'll get into the trades. I guess, you know, the positive headliner over the last, you know, week and a half is Chipper Jones going to the Hall of Fame, which feels like it's been buried because there's just been so much other news, you know, both positive and negative. But let's talk about Chipper for a second. First of all, you know, I was talking about this offline before we started recording about how silly it is that the Hall of Fame weekend is right when it is. It's going to be easily overshadowed by other things, but it's pretty cool that Chipper's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, man. I mean, if you were a 90s kid growing up, he was your hero, right? I mean, I remember wanting to be, I played third base as a kid because I wanted to be Chipper Jones. So it was pretty cool to see him get in there, and obviously as deserving of a player as you can be. And it was nice to see, you know, as fate would have it, as you mentioned, you know, it's 48 hours before the trade deadline. Sean Newcomb's working on his no hitter, and you're right, it just kind of got overshadowed, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, under normal circumstances, like if Chipper had gone to the Hall of Fame in May or even in like late August or something, we probably would spend 20 minutes on Chipper, just because that's a huge thing. And I mean, it's sort of weird that you talk about the guy when he's elected to the Hall of Fame, and then you don't really talk about him that much when it actually happens, because we just kind of known for a while. We talked about it at the time, sort of reminiscing about Chipper. And I know a lot of people that we know and follow were there. You know, Grant McCauley and those guys were all up there at Cooperstown. I would have liked to have been there. It would have been fun. I was not there, but yeah, definitely a cool thing. You know, I kind of funny. I was never the biggest Chipper fan, but at the same time, you kind of just knew how good he was. It wasn't like a situation where he was never, quote, my guy, but he was just the best player for, I mean, aside from that, obviously he's the best position player for a long, long time. And like, by the time he was retiring, he was a no doubt lock Hall of Famer. We kind of all knew it. So there's a little bit of like, I'm not sure if it's anticlimactic or something, but like, we kind of just knew this was going to happen, and we got there. Yeah. And it was cool, though, just to kind of take that all in. I was actually traveling and did get to watch the speech live, but got to watch the replay of it and made sure I went and did that, just because I wanted to definitely make sure that I remember that. I mean, you and I are close enough to the same age where, you know, I'm a little bit older than you, but Chipper is, you know, was the guy for me growing up as well. It was like, you know, I was more of a Maddox Glavin guy than a Chipper guy, but at the same time, like, there's no question how great Chipper was. And at least wanted to lead off a little bit with that on the positive side. You mentioned Sean Newcomb. On the positive side for Newcomb, he had a near no-hitter on Sunday that was, again, probably would have been a huge lead story under normal circumstances on the podcast, when a guy takes a no-hitter to the last batter of the game before it was broken up. And, of course, you know, Kent Merker's the last no-hitter for the Braves in 94. I was 7 years old when that happened. So
I was four.
Yeah. So it kind of tells you how long ago that was when it happened. Of course, that's now been overshadowed as well by his really bad tweets, which I don't want to spend too much time on. But of course, you know, he apologized for them. The team issued a statement basically, you know, condemning him. And I think, you know, I'm reading it in here now. It says that, you know, the team said that they find the tweets hurtful, incredibly disappointing, even though that he was young when they did them. It doesn't make them any less tolerable, was the quote from the Braves. That's the obvious takeaway here. There's no defending what Sean Newcomb said on Twitter. So I don't want to do anything beyond that. But of course, it just sort of was unfortunate, and hopefully he, you know, hopefully he feels differently now. I would definitely hope that. I mean, of course, he definitely said that and apologized for it. I would hope in my heart that he feels differently now, but we also don't know him well enough to know. So it's one of those things where it's unfortunate and we have to talk about it, but that's kind of all I got on it. I don't know.
The fact that there's not, like, me and you should start a business where we just go through athletes, like old Twitter and Instagram and Facebook posts, and just, or even just famous people in general, and go in and delete them if they have any bad ones before they get big famous. Because, yeah. I mean, it's crazy. It's Newcomb. It was Josh Hader, of course, over the All-Star break. It was Trey Turner with the Nationals. They found some suspect tweets from him. Again, you know, tweets from 6 years ago when he was much, much younger. Not that it excuses it by any means. It's really unfortunate. And, it, you know, as they say, it's once it's on the internet, it's there forever. So hopefully he learned from it. And as you said, obviously doesn't have those same thoughts anymore.
Yep. He was young, but it does definitely, as the Braves said, and as he said, does not excuse it. So we'll kind of put that there, and hopefully he could build off of the pitching side of the things where he looked great on Sunday. So that's the one positive of that. All right, we can move on from there. I wanted to at least touch on it real quick. There was the other bit of, I guess, news. I'm not sure if it even qualifies as news, but it became a huge talking point over the weekend, and that was the Joe Simpson batting practice saga with regard to Chase Utley. Before I let you talk about this, I kind of go out of my way to not talk about the broadcast team. I see a lot of bashing of the broadcast team in general on Twitter, people that I trust, and especially people that are out of the market and have to listen to them and all that fun stuff. I will say it's not my favorite broadcast in the league, but at the same time, I kind of go out of my way not to crap on people like that. But at the same time, even I kind of had to mention how bad that looked for Joe Simpson, and he got crushed, rightfully so, in my opinion, nationwide. For the if you guys missed this somehow, he was basically very critical of Chase Utley, who was in a t-shirt and I guess not traditional batting practice, you know, uniform gear when he was doing that. But of course, he was wearing a strikeout cancer t-shirt, which made things even worse for Joe Simpson. So I mean, aside from it just being a sort of embarrassing thing for the Braves, did you have a big picture take other than that? Because I just think he just looks silly. I think he probably realizes that now. And there was a discussion. I'm not sure if there was an apology. I'm not sure if I read that or not. But he definitely talked to the Dodgers after the fact. But got some bad press, to be sure.
Yeah, it was ugly for him. I mean, just listening to it live, you almost did like a double take. Like, is he really doing this?
I didn't hear it live. I was actually, because I was traveling, I didn't hear it. I was following along on Twitter, and I was reading people reacting to it, which is kind of funny. And I'm thinking, man, what is he saying? Because I'm reading Twitter, and I'm like, man, everybody's crushing Joe Simpson right now. And that happens sometimes. But at the same time, I went back and listened to it. I was like, oh, this is as bad as I thought it was.
Yeah. No, it was rough. And, you know, it was rough even before it was known that the shirt that he was making fun of Chase Utley or degrading Chase Utley for wearing was a strikeout cancer shirt. You know, it wasn't just a tank top that he picked up at the store and decided to wear out. So it was ugly all the way around. He did, you know, to his credit, he went down to the Dodgers dugout the next day and apologized to a couple of the players, issued a couple sentence statement, apologized. And I think people who know me, who follow me, know I'm not a fan of Chip and Joe at all. I guess we can just kind of leave it at that. And
that's probably best.
He's kind of turned into super grumpy old man lately. And that was really bizarre, just how upset he was over it. But hey, to each their own. And if he really feels that way, then so be it.
Yeah. And apparently Chip deleted his Twitter account over the weekend, which is another thing that we can make fun of. We'll choose not to on the podcast. Please follow Scott for his thoughts on Chip and Joe on Twitter. All right, let's get off that. Let's talk about some trades or some non-trades first. Let's talk about Chris Archer, because that was almost a bigger story than what actually happened was all the Archer stuff. It sort of it was sort of a crescendo earlier on the day on Tuesday. It felt like for a minute the Braves were like in the driver's seat for Archer. Later, Alex Anthopoulos said on the record that he didn't, I guess, consider the Braves to be serious players in the Archer sweepstakes. So I guess there was some reporting there. They got a little bit too aggressive, at least from what Anthopoulos was saying publicly about how like not close that got. But he of course is going to the Pirates. it's easy to be disappointed to a certain extent. I think Archer is a better pitcher than the pitcher the Braves actually acquired. But at the same time, I think the price we saw with what they got from Pittsburgh was going to be a lot higher than what the Braves paid for Kevin Gausman. So where were you at with Archer the whole time? Were you willing to pay market price for him, or were you a little bit more skeptical?
I'm as big of a Chris Archer fan as you'll find. The Pirates did. They paid a heavy, hefty price. I mean, the shine has come off a little bit, just a little bit, with Glasnow, just with his development. But Austin Meadows is a really solid player, and they have a player to be named later. And according to the reports that everyone has, it's not a, you know, it's not an 18-year-old down in the Dominican Summer League. It's someone legit. So it was a lot. I know someone threw out a comparison of a, you know, like a maybe a like a Mike Soroka, Austin Riley, and then a third prospect return. I'm not sure I would have paid that for Archer, even as much of a fan as I am.
Yeah, I saw Tukey and like Drew Waters as another comp like that. It's one of those, like, it's tough to do 1v1 comps, but I think if the Braves paid a comparable price in their own prospects, people would have been very upset.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have been, by the way, but I think the consensus would have been that they overpaid, at least from the fan base that treats these prospects like their absolute goal. I think people would have been a little bit bothered by that.
Right, and that was my whole thing all day, you know, as we said, we kind of follow in real time, and Braves, maybe the Brewers, maybe the Pirates, maybe the Dodgers, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the Pirates had him. I mean, I think it went from a matter of 15 minutes of all these teams are interested and a deal is going to get done to, you know, done deal, Pittsburgh's getting him. It was a lot. I mean, 24 hours ago, you would have thought the Pirates were firmly on kind of the bubble, if you will. And then they go and trade for Keone Aquila, who is a very good late-inning reliever from Texas. And then they'll go out and get the best pitcher on the market, probably the best player other than Manny Machado on the market. And I would imagine Archer's going to go to Pittsburgh and really pitch well for them. So good for Pittsburgh. I mean, for a team that was kind of tearing it down, kind of not. Yeah, I mean
– For reference, I mean, this is not everything, but I just quickly, while you're talking, looked at the 538 odds. They have an 11% playoff chance right now. And, like, they went out and bought after selling over the offseason. I mean, they traded Garrett Cole, they traded Andrew McCutchen, what they were going to do this teardown, and now they're buying again when they're not in this great spot. Like, if they were in the Braves' position, I would sort of understand. But they have a pretty uphill battle. It's kind of a strange decision. This is not the Talking Pirates podcast, but that was a strange one, to be sure.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I mean, they're 55-52. They're not going to catch Chicago or Milwaukee at the top of the division. But, you know, as we've seen, the wild card, it's one game. If you can get in either of those two spots, you play one game and see what happens. Adding someone like Chris Archer certainly helps a one-game playoff scenario and see what happens. It looks like they're about 3.5 games out of the second wild card spot right now with 2 months to go. So it was certainly a surprise.
Yeah, I have no objection. It is what it is. They paid a lot for him, and I think he's worth it. I was a big Archer fan as well. I would have been okay with the Braves paying the position, paying the price that it would have cost. But alas, they did not do that. And by the way, in the midst of his post deadline interview, Anthopoulos got a nice shot in at John Coppola. It felt like. Did you see that quote?
I did. Yeah, he really took a shot at him.
I'm going to read it here word for word. Quote, I guarantee you there's players in the big leagues that we would trade anybody for. I wouldn't cut my arms off or anything like that when it comes to trading players, end quote. And Dave O'Brien of The Athletic reported that the media laughed on the heels of that as well. So,
yeah.
We'll kind of leave that out there, but it was a pretty clear shot at Coffee. So, you know.
Someone said he's working at Home Depot Corporate in Atlanta now.
Sure, I believe that. I mean, he's got – the thing is, if you're a GM for as long as you want, he's got some money, but at the same time, he probably isn't just going to sit around for the rest of his life. So
yeah, well, he's like 40. Yeah, he's 40. He can't just sit around. I mean, yeah, you're right. GMs make okay money, but not retire at 40 years old money.
I mean, I'm sure he could never work again if he just wanted to do that. But guys who become GMs when they're in their 30s probably don't want to go sit around for 40 years. So no. He's going to be doing something. So shots to Coffee wherever you might be if you're listening to the podcast. The other quick
wouldn't that be funny?
Yes. The other quick rumor that came and went in a hurry on Tuesday was that the Braves were at one point tied to Matt Harvey, the former Mets pitcher, now current Reds pitcher, who was not traded at all, by the way, which is kind of strange. It was very brief, and it looked like That was not necessarily the most reliable reporting in the world, but I did tweet in the middle of the and the height of the Archer and Matt Harvey stuff that it would be extremely Braves to be tied to Chris Archer forever and then end up with Matt Harvey. They did not, but at the same time, I would have not liked that very much. At least if it was like free, then sure, but it wouldn't have been. So
No, and I'm not a Harvey fan, so
no.
I'm glad that didn't work out.
Yes. All right. We've now done 13 minutes or 14 minutes on non-things that happened. So it's time to talk about the things that did happen. And the headliner is Kevin Gausman. I was prepared to talk about Adam Duvall as the headliner because he was the headliner until Tuesday. But let's talk about the Gausman trade. I'll read the particulars to you right now. The Braves acquired Kevin Gausman and Darren O'Day, who we'll talk about more in the midst of this podcast, from the Orioles in exchange for Gene Carlos, Encarnacion, Brett Cumberland, Evan Phillips, Bruce Zimmerman, and international signing slots, plural. So, I mean, there was a couple of iterations of this. It was kind of strange. The reporting was that the trade was done, and then it was like 20 minutes or so, maybe even longer
Oh,
before
at
we
least
actually
I think it
knew.
was good, like 30, 40
Maybe
minutes
30,
before.
40. Yeah, I mean, it was a long time before we knew what the particulars were. The first reporting that we got, it was a little, it was three players, then it was four players, then it was, whatever it ended up being, six player deal, something like that. Gausman is the centerpiece, but I mean, O'Day, we talk about real quick before you talk about Gausman in depth. O'Day has been a very good reliever for a long time. At the same time, he had hamstring surgery that's season ending in early July, and he's owed $9 million for 2019. So people really were kind of weirded out by that. I really wasn't necessarily, but he's going to be expensive for next year. I think he's a solid reliever if he's healthy and the guy he's been for a long time. But that was the piece that was reported last and kind of brought down people just a little bit. I think everybody still liked the deal, at least the people that we trust kind of like the deal still. But that definitely took a little bit of the shine off of it as well as the prospect haul. But I mean, what was your first big picture thought on this? Because I personally liked it from the beginning and still do.
I'm a big fan of the trade. You mentioned taking on Darren O'Day. It was a little bit of a surprise because that was reported at the very end. I think that was purely a way for the Braves to lower the prospect cost for Gausman, which I would much rather take on, a solid reliever for $9 million next year than, imagine if you don't take him, and this is all hypothetical, of course, but imagine if you have to include a Luis Gohara instead of Bruce Zimmerman, right? Because you don't take that $9 million in salary relief. No disrespect to any of the guys. Evan Phillips, his ceiling is what, a good seventh, eighth inning reliever. Jean Carlos is a very young, has potential. I think he had kind of crept into the top 15 of, I think he was 15th actually on the Talking Chop recent
Yeah,
prospect
he was the
rankings.
he was the highest guy according to our guys. There were, prospect lists are definitely, variable, but RTC guys
Sure.
had him as the highest ranked prospect in the
And
first trade.
I think he was 14 or 15 on 14 or 15 for Pipeline, and in the 20s for Baseball America. So by all means, a prospect, but exactly that, a prospect. He's very young. He has a lot of swing and miss to his game. Brett Cumberland was an intriguing guy, a college bat, potential to catch, probably more of a backup catcher out, fourth outfielder kind of look to his game. I think he'll hit enough to be a big leaguer, but he certainly has limited upside with his defensive inabilities. He's not going to be a guy who can go out and catch 100 and 130 games a year. So for that, and to send $2.5 million of the international money that you can't really spend anyway, I'm a fan of Gausman. I was digging into his numbers a little bit deeper today, and you look at him, and a guy who has been pretty solid. He's been a number three starter really throughout his entire time with Baltimore. He's a guy who's been around for 4 years now. You look at him, career 4.22 ERA, 4.16 FIP, 3.93 xFIP, which is, I think, noteworthy just because Camden Yards is such a home run friendly park. You look at his home run rate the last 3 years, 1.4, 1.4, and 1.5 home runs per nine. That'll obviously go down. This year, SunTrust is actually the least home run prone stadium, or least likely to give up a home run, however you want to
You
phrase
remember when
that.
SunTrust was this launching pad for the first like 2 weeks and everybody freaked out?
That's
That was fun.
because that's because Bartolo and Julio were throwing the first two games.
I just I will never I will never forget the absolute mass freak out of that. Like it was like Coors Field East and all this stuff, and it's like, oh, guess not. Anyway,
For
sorry.
like 2 months, and then it died out. So I'm a fan. I think moving forward, I think he could be a number three starter in the National League, or I don't see why he wouldn't be. I think getting out of the American League East, you think about his situation right now in Baltimore. The team is 50 games below 500. He knows they're not going to be good anytime soon. They've already traded away a handful of guys. the Orioles have the worst defense in baseball behind him. The Braves, by whatever metric you want to look at, are top three, top five. And you go from Camden Yards, which is as friendly of a ballpark as there is in the American League, to SunTrust, which I think is a pretty fair ballpark, all things considered. And you think about, you're going to go from the American League East, where you're facing the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Blue Jays, who historically have had a really nice lineup, and the Rays, and playing 40% of your games against them. And then you're facing the Mets and the Marlins, the Nats and the Phillies for 40% of your games. So I'm hopeful Jake Arrieta is the easy hope with him. Obviously, Arrieta was in Baltimore, was an okay starter, moved to Chicago and turned into a stud for a couple years there. You hope he can have some kind of a similar renaissance. And because the price was what it was, I'm pretty happy, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, I think people, there was some reaction that was negative. I think most people that kind of do what we do and cover the team more analytically were pretty pleased by this, honestly. If you have to look beyond the numbers with Gausman, at least the traditional numbers with Gausman, to get a real picture of what he is. But more importantly, before we talk about Gausman, which I know you did a little bit just now, you know, they traded quantity of prospects. They traded four guys in this deal, but none of those guys were in anybody's top 10 of the entire Braves system. Yeah. And I mean, there's a couple of places where they weren't even in the top 15. Like, they traded some quality prospects.
Top 30 even, yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, you can afford to do that. And I'm definitely with you that taking on the O'Day money for 2019 lessened the blow there. And I'm okay with that because, you know, O'Day, when he's healthy, has been a good pitcher. And he's not going to be a closer or anything like that, but he can be a quality late-inning reliever. $9 million is $9 million, but it's only one more year, and you know, the Braves have all this money to spend, theoretically, for the 2019 club, so I have no real issue with that at all, especially if it limits your prospect exposure, which seems to be the consensus at this point in time. So, I mean, Gausman, if you're trying to build the negative case on Gausman, you could probably do that by saying that he has a 4.58 ERA since the start of the 2017 season, so that's not great, obviously. If you look beyond that, though, his numbers are a little bit better than that, a little bit more encouraging than that. And, you know, this is a high pedigree guy. He was a top five pick in the draft in 2012. Like, this is not some, like, soft throwing. He's got a lot of talent. Definitely a high pedigree guy. And I think everything that you mentioned there, the Orioles are sort of known for handling pitchers terribly, all that fun stuff, in addition to the AL East. And the fact that he has a really high ground ball rate, which is nice because of the fact that, you know, in addition to, you know, all the defensive strength that the Braves have right now, you know, infield defense has been pretty darn good with Dansby and Ozzie and Camargo, especially at third base. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy about this. You know, this is a very, very random sample, but a 3.13 ERA and 12 starts against a non-AL East teams this year. I don't really care about that, but that stat was making the rounds a little bit today. Yeah. So I like the trade. I think the cost was relatively low. I made a tweet about how I would do a backflip if Brett Cumberland was the lead prospect in the trade for Kevin Gausman, and he was. So yeah. I will owe a backflip to someone. I'll video that if I can pull it off. But
who knows what Tampa Bay really wanted from Atlanta? It's hard to compare, you know.
Yeah, it's not. It's never going to be as easy to compare as you think it would be. You know,
right,
I mean?
But you know, let's hypothetically say if we're going to match up player values and future values, you know, if you said, you know, hey Brad, you can have Chris Archer and you'll get you'll give up Kyle Wright, Austin Riley, and JCE, and maybe, you know, and some international money, or you can have Kyle Gausman for the four prospects who he was traded for. I mean, me personally, I would take the Gausman trade 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, the Gausman deal is just it's a better value. It's, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, no one's saying Chris Archer is not better than Kevin Gausman, because he is. But at the same time, Gausman is younger, which is interesting, by the way. He's only 27. He's got 2 years of arbitration remaining, which you're going to be paying some money for. It's not like you're going to be getting him for nothing. But at the same time, like, it's going to limit your cost a little bit, even if he's good. You know, Archer is signed for even cheaper, which is why, and an extra year, which is why his price is so high, because it's 3 years, it's not arbitration years. It's 3 years of, like, controlled, like, you know, $6-8 million a year. It's, like, this incredible value deal. Yeah. But, you know, Gausman has more upside than he's shown. He's not, I wouldn't say higher upside than Chris Archer, but he strikes out people. You know, he's almost a strikeout per inning guy in his career. It's one of those things where
less mileage on his arm too.
Yeah. Less mileage. You know, if you can get him under control and certain things, like his walk rate's back down to where it was before last year, there's been times when he's been just like abjectly dominant for like a month or two in a row, and then he'll kind of fall out. He has an interesting array of pitches, and I'm not going to claim to be a pitching expert, but if you can sort of round him out into where he's using his best stuff effectively, I do think that there is upside to have him be like a number two starter for you. I wouldn't necessarily project that, but you're paying a price for a number four or five guy with,
yeah.
And my expectation would be that he's your number three for a while here. I do think there's actually a real scenario where he's better than that, but like on the current roster, he's your third best pitcher immediately.
Yeah, he might even be better than Newcomb, I would argue.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying at least your third best pitcher. I think Newcomb is definitely polarizing right now. He was great, of course, on Sunday, but before that, he really struggled for a while. Fulte's been great all year, but, you know, at a bare minimum, he's better than Julio. He's better than Anibal. He's better than all the young guys right now. I'm not saying he has the upside of some of the young guys. Like, Tukey's upside's obviously higher, all that fun stuff. But I do think he helps you, and he helps you at a very reasonable cost, and he's locked up for two more years. That's a really, really nice combination, especially if you're looking to move on from Julio after this year, which I think is pretty likely, honestly, given how bad he's been and the fact that he was a pre-Anthopoulos guy. So, you know, moving forward, there are really only two guys in the system that you were absolutely dead bang projecting for the 2019 rotation, and that was Newcomb and Fulte. Now you add a third. So
yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the control. I mean, he's making $5.5 million this year in ARB2. He's going to, you know, let's say he makes $7 or $8 million next year in arbitration and then gets up to 10 or 12 if he has a really nice year next year. I mean, that's really reasonable for 2.5, you know, for 2 years of control, whereas everyone knows how dangerous it is to start spending big on free agent pitchers because it just tends to be a circus. So yeah, you're right. It's not just something that'll help this year. It should, in theory, help 2019, 2020.
For sure. And I think, you know, this year it does help you. It's not a situation where that makes you, the addition of Kevin Gausman makes you some sort of World Series contender, but at the same time, he's an upgrade on the other options that you have. I know some of the people that were more negative about the trade were referencing, you know, in 2 years, is he going to be in the rotation? Like, you know, maybe if he pitches well, and if not, whatever, it's one more year of control. And, you know, I know the Braves have all these arms, but they're not all going to hit. It's just what it is. Like, they're already going to be, you need to be dealing from a position of strength. The Braves have it, and they didn't even pay top dollar for Gausman. So
no,
I love this trade, frankly. Yeah. I mean, it did lessen it a little bit once we saw Encarnacion was in the trade, and so was O'Day, but at the same time, it's still an unequivocal positive, and I loved it. And I know what Baltimore is doing. They're for once trying to restock and finally deciding to rebuild, which is makes sense. It's time. It's been time for them for a long time, but the Braves take advantage of that and get a guy who has real upside. Again, former top five pick. There's a reason for that. He's a very talented pitcher. So we'll see what it looks like, but I like it quite a bit.
Me too, man. It's nice. I tweeted this the other day. It's really nice to actually be acquiring players at the deadline instead of trying to find like takers for the 10 guys who have trade value. It's been nice to actually acquire players instead of have to get rid of them all.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of weirdly enjoyed the sell-off process in trade because fortunately the Braves got a lot of good returns when they were doing that. Like, they were pretty good at it, I think.
Copy was great at it.
They were pretty good at the teardown process, but at the same time, this definitely is more fun, especially when you factor in like, hey, what does Kevin Gausman do for a playoff team? You know what I mean? Like, it's a different discussion when you're talking about adding a guy that helps you right now and also in the future. And you know, the one thing the Braves were consistent with the whole time is that if they were going to pay any real price for a trade guy, it was going to be someone who was under control. Gausman's under control. He's not Chris Archer, but I mean, I'll say this. In 2 years, it would not surprise me in the slightest if he's better than Chris Archer.
Yeah, I could see that.
By any means. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, like, Archer has leveled off a little bit. He's a little bit older. And Gausman is as talented, I would say, like purely talented.
Archer's a pitcher, sure. But
yeah. No, so there's a non-zero chance of that, and you paid a price that's like, you know, infinitely less than what they would have paid for Chris Archer. So
yes, I'm a big fan.
I'm totally cool with that. All right, we can move on to the lesser trades. Although the Adam Duvall trade is the next one we'll talk about. That was a real trade. It wasn't like that wasn't a throw-in kind of deal like the other two that we'll talk about here in a second. But earlier in the weekend, I suppose, the Braves traded Lucas Sims, Matt Whistler, and Preston Tucker, which is a bizarre trio to send somewhere. I'm actually stunned that Sims and Whistler were in the same trade as, I guess, value pieces, if you're talking about the Reds, in exchange for Adam Duvall. I love this trade too, mostly because I am not convinced that either Sims or Whistler has any trade value. I know Whistler doesn't have any trade value, at least in my mind. Sims, I guess, is a little bit higher valued around the league, I suppose. At least I have to guess. It was kind of weird to see those three players net you. Like, I'm not saying this is like this lights out asset, but Adam Duvall is an interesting player, to be sure.
He's serviceable. I didn't realize he was as good defensively as what he's been.
Yeah, last 3 years, man, he's been very good in left field.
Yeah, he rates out as a top, you know, maybe a top five even corner outfielder, at least left fielder defensively. Really good there.
you know, the service numbers this year are not nearly as good as they were before. I mean, honestly, his service numbers aren't great this year.
No, but some of the advanced stuff makes him – he's been unlucky this year almost certainly.
Yeah. I mean, everything he's doing is similar to what he's done the last couple of years. I think he had a 102 WRC plus and an 800 OPS the last two or three seasons before this. And the way he's hitting the ball, the way he's putting the ball in the air, it's just been unlucky, as you mentioned. You know, I think the most interesting thing is the Braves came out and basically said, hey, against lefty pitching, Duvall's our left fielder and Acuña's going to slide to center and Ender's going to sit. And that's kind of how it is. I mean, I would imagine that's going to be the way the next 2 months or so.
I mean, I mean, I was surprised that Anthopoulos said that as publicly as he did, but he did. And listen, we talked about Ender a lot on this podcast. He can't hit left-handed pitching. It's not even a new thing. Even when he was good, he wasn't hitting left-handed pitching. And, you know, Adam Duvall, again, is not this, like, incredible masher, but in his career has about an 800 OPS against lefties. So yeah. I think if you combine that performance against left-handed pitching, you have a guy in Acuña that can play a high-end center field defensively. You don't lose much on defense because Duvall is good in left field. There's no reason. There's no argument against it. I think one of the ways that I defended the Braves still playing Ender against left-handed pitching was that there wasn't another option. I never thought Charlie Culberson was good enough to actually displace Inciarte.
Yeah,
but Duvall is. So yeah,
because of the glove, especially.
Yeah, the glove and the fact that it's about a 500 plate appearance sample of him being a very good hitter against left-handed pitching. So if you combine those two things, I have no issue with that. I think that's the best way to align your team right now. I mean, and to Ender's credit, it seems like he's handling that well and he's kind of taking it in stride. I think there will probably be a day or two where he plays just because Brian Snicker's reputation. I think he's going to play a little bit more than we think he might, at least more than Anthopoulos has said that he was going to. But listen, you know, left-handed pitchers are fewer and far between the righties, so Ender's still going to play the lion's share of the time. But at the same time, like, it's just a better alignment, and the fact that Anthopoulos said it means it's going to happen because he's kind of the guy in charge. So I like it a lot for that reason. I think Duvall is, you know, if we assume he's the guy he was a couple years ago, I don't really care about the 30 home runs that he was hitting in Great American Ballpark. That's probably not representative. But if he's the same guy he was against left-handed pitching, which is a slightly above average hitter or better, that he helps your team at a very, very limited cost because what they gave up, I mean, let's just be honest about it. None of the three guys that they gave up were really in the plans at all.
Yeah, it's 40-man roster clutter, honestly. I mean, it was funny. I think in our Slack chat the other day, we said, hey, you know, as it came out that Allard was going to debut and Tukey might not be far behind and they're going to make all these moves, you know, it was said, look, they're going to have to make some kind of 20 and 40 or 25 and 40 man roster decision. Somewhere. And that trade cleared out three guys. Now, obviously, you have to have one for Duvall, but it really just kind of cleared out some of the clutter in a hurry. And, you know, Anthopoulos said in the nicest way possible after the trade, you know, look, these guys probably weren't going to be with us next year. We were likely going to non-tender them or DFA them and get them off the 40 man. So
it's a great move in that way because, by the way, Duvall is cheap, very, very cheap. And he hits arbitration next year, but considering how little he's probably going to play overall, I can't imagine he's going to get that much in arbitration either.
No, probably $2 million.
Yeah, it's a situation where at worst you're going to have an upgrade on the bench because he's a, you know, even at his worst, he's a better bench option than some of what the Braves had before. And you're getting him at basically no cost. So yeah. I love that trade too. It's not this huge splash deal, but it's something that makes a ton of sense. Or the Braves, they optioned Michael Reed, who was up there, you know, taking the fourth outfielder, fifth outfielder at bats. That's fine. It is what it is. He can come back if they have a spot for him later on. But getting something out of Lucas Sims and Matt Whistler is a win. There's no way around it. So
there's zero downside with that trade.
No, if Duvall doesn't work, if he's just horrible, then they just cut bait and they, you know, they basically just end up with something that would happen anyway because they were, again, as you mentioned, probably not going to tender any of those three guys. Maybe they could have gotten something for Lucas Sims in trade, but not much. So here we are. Congratulations to the Reds. I don't really know what they're doing, and I can't help but think about Sims and Whistler in Great American Ballpark, and that's not going to go very well, I don't think. I wish those guys the best, though. I mean, Lucas Sims is a local guy. Whistler, people had high hopes for. I know Carlos always loved Matt Whistler. I hope those guys find it somewhere else. I'm not rooting against them by any means. I'm not necessarily thinking it's going to happen, but I hope it does, just because I like those guys. So.
Yeah, me too.
There you go. All right, those were the two big moves. There were two. very sort of fringy reliever additions before that that actually, again, make very much sense because they were both for international signing slot money. First was Johnny Venters, old friend of the Braves, who is now back, and then Brad Brock, who is a probably a bigger name at this point in time than Johnny Venters is. He's not been great this year, but a guy who is definitely another buy low. So do you like either of those moves? Again, basically zero risk guys. And for my money, they're both upgrades on the other options that are currently on the roster. So that makes it a good move for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, for the cost of $250,000 each with IFA money
that they couldn't use.
Right. Yeah, it was just going to sit there. I mean, they can spend a little bit this year. They're not fully locked down like next year, but you know, they were smart to do it again. They didn't tap into their prospect capital for two, as you said, you know, decent relievers. They're better than the alternatives, which we kind of saw were Sam Freeman and Peter Moylan, as both of them have been put on the DL the last.
Let's make fun of that right now, because both of those are absolutely, I mean, maybe those guys were dinged up a little bit, but man, that does not feel like, feels like
the old groin strain.
Yeah, that's the old, you can't get anybody else to go on the DL, so we don't have to DFA you kind of thing. And I feel bad because everybody loves Peter Moylan. Everybody loves Peter Moylan. And Sam Freeman actually used to have some high hopes for. He's been really bad this year. But yeah, those guys, I think, I mean, they're still on the roster, so maybe they'll come back at some point in time, but sure. I'm hoping they don't just because it's clear they're not very good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Sam Freeman has not been good lately. He was solid last year.
He was, and it's the same thing. I sort of have high hopes for him because he had a couple of nice moments, but he's been, every time he trots in the game this year, I'm like, oh, Sam Freeman.
The stuff isn't terrible, whereas Moylan, I mean, Moylan's more or less just throwing frisbees up there and hoping the batters, you know, their eyes get so big that they swing over it. You know, again, you're talking about probably the 24th and 25th guys on the roster. I'm sure I can't imagine they come off the DL before the rosters expand in a month. But yeah, I was a fan. Johnny Venters is such a cool story. I mean, he's already locked up the Comeback Player of the Year award, which, I mean, you can imagine just one Tommy John must be a lot to overcome, but to overcome three over a 6-year period. I mean, good for him, man. And he was obviously thrilled to be back. And he mentioned that this was going to be his last week with his kids and his wife down in Tampa. Before school started, since they live just outside of Atlanta. So for him to be able to come and live at home was great. And Brock is a legitimate late inning reliever. I'm not sure he's a guy who you're going to necessarily want to pencil in for 50 save opportunities, but someone who does have some closing experience if Minter needs a night off, or, you know, hey, if you're facing the Nats in the eighth inning and Harper, Soto, and Daniel Murphy are about to come up, then you throw Minter in the eighth and you feel okay with Brock in the ninth. So all good. It's not huge moves. It's not going to be the difference between the Braves going to the World Series or not, but certainly upgrades over who they replaced, and for the cost, it was kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, Brock's been very unlucky this year. You know, 371 BABIP. His career numbers are very good. I think he's been really bad lately. It's sort of a buy low because of that, and that sort of works to the Braves' advantage. And again, if he's just broken now, which is not out of the realm of possibility by any means, he's an older guy, but at the same time, he's got some money on the books for this year, but that money doesn't really matter too much unless you're Liberty Media. So take a flyer there. And Venters is making literally nothing. He's on the league minimum, and he's a great story. And just pitch him against lefties, put him in the Sam Freeman role, at least what the Sam Freeman role should be, and just be like the third lefty. Like, it's fine.
You're not having him as your closer.
He's not the guy he was when he was just absolutely incredible. It's obviously a great story, all that stuff. He's been actually pretty effective this year, but he's never going to be the guy he used to be. At the same time, just make him a loogie and it's fine.
It's
not a big deal. So those guys make you a little bit better, if only because they replace the guys who were driving everybody crazy before that. I mean, that's all the moves. Let's talk about big picture stuff. I mean, what happens now? I mean, there's still the possibility that the Braves could make another deal before the waiver deadline. That does happen every once in a while. I think it was Justin Verlander got traded last year before the waiver deadline. There's some stuff that usually happens. I wouldn't say the Braves are super likely to do that, but I mean, rotation-wise, you obviously add Gosman in the bullpen. You add those two. You add Brock and you add Venters in 2019. Of course, you had O'Day, not quite there yet. Anything change in your mind? Of course, the Braves are better than they were yesterday or the day before that or the day before that. But how much better are they? Does this change your forecast for the rest of the season? Or where kind of are you after all this? And how would you grade these moves sort of in the vacuum?
Yeah, I think from a, you know, today perspective to this time a week ago, they've certainly gotten better. I mean, if Gosman's going to make starts, if you add those two relievers, you add Duvall off the bench to add some depth, I mean, they're a better team now than they were, you know, than they were a week ago. So that's all very encouraging. You know, long, for the next 2 months, I don't know, you might see, it seems like Adrian Beltre is going to stay put in Texas. Josh Donaldson's a name who he's been hurt basically all year, just because of the familiarity with Alex Anthopoulos. Maybe if he comes back, Toronto and the Braves would work out a deal if they want one more right-handed bat to kind of make Camargo that utility guy they want to see him as. But honestly, Camargo has outperformed Beltre, and this year he's outperformed Donaldson, though Donaldson really only has a handful of games under his belt. So maybe one of those, maybe a reliever. There's always, you know, relievers always sneak through waivers decently easy.
Someone will be available on the bullpen market if they need that person. But
yeah,
I mean, they might be done now, honestly. I mean, especially even that's the bullpen, like if Brock and Venters are even decent-ish, they're probably done. I mean, you figure Aroides will come back at some point. You know, the news has not been great there necessarily, but they do have him coming back at some point here, hopefully. So yeah, it's a situation where this might be the roster and it's better than it was.
And you have the kids too.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. They have all these, on a normal podcast, we'd be talking more about the guys who've been promoted recently. You know, Kyle Wright came up, Bryce Wilson's coming up. Tukey's already up AAA. Like there's some help coming. I think Tukey would be that's the obvious, like, high end bullpen guy for the playoff run. Is Tukey. I'm not sure if they're going to do that, but sort of in that David Price role when he first came up, there's been Adam Wainwright, that kind of role. He's the obvious one. But yeah, I mean, you also could, you know, Colby Howard's pitching right now for the Atlanta Braves as we're talking. Yeah. I don't think Colby Howard's upside super high, but at the same time, like, he's 20 years old and pitching in the big leagues right now. So
yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So there's some stuff there. I tweeted out the playoff odds on a couple of the projection systems on Tuesday morning. You know, of course, this was this is not taking into account the roster moves. This is all based on, you know, actual pure performance. But most of the systems have the Braves somewhere in the 50-50 range when it comes to making the playoffs. Mm. FanGraphs is pretty low on them, about 33%. But do you think, you know, at this moment, I'm not going to hold you to this super closely, but do you think the Braves are making the playoffs at this point? I think I probably would bet on yes, but not with a huge amount of conviction, if that makes sense, because the Nats didn't sell. Yeah. And I do think the Nats are... I'm not sure they're better than the Braves, but that wouldn't blow me away if they got hot and won 13-14, that kind of thing at some point in time. But and then you have the Phillies. So I think I'd bet on the Braves making it, but I'm not super convinced of that.
I mean, you say the homer answer. Gun to my head, I think they get in.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably some homer element of me saying that, if I'm honest. It's just one of those things where I'm also higher on Gausman than I think most people are. Even before this, like, I'm a longtime Kevin Gausman fantasy owner, for instance. Like, I think he's going to be good. And that helps. I mean, I that might only be a win different than whoever he was pitching ahead of, whether it be, you know, Anibal Sanchez or whoever else. But I think if you can take one of the guys who's been a sort of mess out of the rotation at Kevin Gausman, that helps you considerably. And the bullpen can't be worse in the middle innings than it's been already.
And you know, you talk about the end of the year, it's I think the last two weekends of the year, and that's the only time they'll see him. The Braves and Phillies are playing each other. I think the second to last weekend, they're at SunTrust for three, and the last weekend of the year, they're at Citizens Bank for the final three games of the year. So even if the Braves have a 3-4 game lead going into that, you know, the final 2 weeks, I mean, there's going to be, or vice versa, they're 3 or 4 back. I mean, there's going to be that opportunity to gain basically two games every night when you're head to head with Philly. I think in a week they have three more with the Nationals. And then the Nats come back to SunTrust a week or two after that. And then they're going to take advantage, hopefully, of the Mets and the Marlins. I mean, they go to New York for a couple games later this week. They get the Mets, I think, once more at SunTrust. They might have one more trip to Citi later this year. I know they have at least two more series with the Marlins. So they're going to have their opportunities, and it's really going to come down to beating the bad teams. That's something they haven't done a great job of, but if they're able to take advantage, it'll go a long way for them.
Yeah. I mean, that's all accurate, I think. I mean, what would you say to the people that are disappointed? I'm not sure how to even talk about it, just because I'm not sure how I put myself in that mindset. But they are out there. I think people just want to see big splashes, and I'm not sure Kevin Gausman qualifies. Yeah. But I think this is about as responsible a way to add to this team as I could have projected. I mean, again, I would have been fine with it, with a big payment for Chris Archer, because I think he is actually very good.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this is a good way to legitimately add to the roster in 2018 while also taking the future into account and really not mortgaging any of it. So like, I don't know how you argue against that is my thing, but maybe
I think your sights were set too high. If, you know, I mean, I tweeted it earlier. It was, think about it like this, right? So a week ago, the Braves hadn't made any of their moves. They hadn't made any moves. They were kind of treading water a little bit. They knew the Dodgers were about to come in. Over the last week, they added Kevin Gausman, Brad Brock, Johnny Venters, Adam Duvall, and a solid reliever, Darren O'Day, next year. He's not going to have an impact this year. So the cost for Gausman, Brock, Venters, Duvall, and O'Day was JCE, Evan Phillips, Brett Cumberland, Lucas Sims, Matt Whistler, Bruce Zimmerman, Kyle Tucker, and
$3 million,
Preston Tucker. I wish we had Kyle Tucker. Preston Tucker. Yeah. And $3 million in money they couldn't spend anyway. I mean, come on.
How do you argue against that? I mean, you know what I mean?
Like, they didn't give up a single prospect.
I'm glad that you said. I mean, there was a couple guys that they gave up that could bite them a little bit. I do think, like, you know, Encarnación could be a great player. Like, it's a situation, not great sure. player, but there's a situation where one or two of these guys are solid major leaguers. But still, there is no argument against what you just said. If you combine these moves, knowing that the international slot money doesn't bite the Braves in the way that it would if they were allowed to spend it. And spend it freely, I should say. There's no argument against what they did. There's just not. Mm-hmm. I don't really see that. I guess some of the narrative that was out there the last week or two was that the Braves, like, you know, should just go out being more aggressive, and it's sort of the typical fan stuff there. But they improved their team. They didn't mortgage the future. I'm not sure what. Again, I'm not sure what the argument is against that. So, yeah. I mean, are they better than the Phillies? I think so. Are they better than the Nats? They don't have to be better than the Nats. You know what I mean? They have such a gap again. They have such a gap over the Nats already that they don't have to be better than the Nats.
Yeah, so, they have to be six games better than Nationals.
Right. I mean, they have
or
to be,
less than
six. Yes, yeah, less than yeah. less than six is worse. I guess is one of the. I mean, so yeah. I mean, do they win the NL East? I'm not sure, but if you factor in the situation where there's also the wild card spot potentially, I mean, I think they make the playoffs. I'm not gonna like go crazy, but even as we speak right now, they have the third best run differential in the National League. This is a pretty good baseball team right now. Yeah. And I think they're more maximized now than they were even early in the season when they were super hot. A lot of that was like, you know, comeback wins and all that fun stuff. But now they have Ronald Acuna hitting leadoff, and they have I think they're in a better spot than they were.
Well, and I think other than the Dodgers, there's really not a team in the National League where if the Braves are paired up in a 5 or 7 game series with them, that I would think, man, this is going to be rough. I think the Dodgers, just with their talent, once they get healthy, they're too much. But, you know, you look at Philly's roster, you know, the Cubs, great lineup, but you're talking about, I mean, you know, Quintana and Lester and Hendricks. I mean, that's not lights out, unhittable. Milwaukee has all kinds of pitching issues right now.
I think the only team that's flat out better than the Braves or the Dodgers is the Cubs. But as you mentioned, their pitching isn't like terrifying.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, get in the playoffs, see what happens. I'm not saying this is going to be a World Series team because it's not probably going to be that, but yeah, they're better than they were like a week ago. That's probably the easiest way to put this and probably a good place to end the podcast is just saying that the Braves upgraded their roster. If you go into late July expecting an upgrade of a roster and you get it and you didn't mortgage anything, there's nothing bad about that. So that's kind of where I am on it. Any final thoughts that you have, my friend? Mm-hmm. I think we've covered a lot of ground in the last 50 minutes or so. Even without hitting a ton of news, there's probably, you know, 7 or 8 topics that we would have touched on under normal circumstances. But when you have, you know, what was the end total? 4 trades? Yeah, you have 4 trades plus the what ifs. That's a full week of podcast.
No, it was a busy week. I mean, you talk about the last 4 days or so. I mean, that's as busy of a Braves news cycle as you're going to really get all year. So it was pretty crazy. It was a lot of fun. The trade deadline was a lot of fun, especially today. I've always thought that I don't know if downside's the right word, but you know, it's not the NBA or the NFL where you have like this 24-hour window of just insanity, 48 hours of insanity. You know, the free agency is so spread out historically, or at least the last couple years, the trade deadline has not had a lot of fireworks just before the end. It's been more spread out over the last week. It really was a lot of fun today to just kind of watch and see everything happen in real time. And as we said, I think you compare where the Braves were a week ago, they're in a much better spot now. And frankly, I think are positioned to at least really make a
a legit run for a playoff spot. And if they, hey, if they fall a little short, they're at least set up next year for good things.
Yeah, if they fall a little short, they have Kevin Gausman, Adam Duvall, and Darren O'Day for next year. So
yeah.
Things could be worse if you're a Braves fan. This is a good day, a good week, I think, if you are a Braves fan. And that's probably a good place to end it. Well, thank you, Scott, for joining me as always, my friend. Please follow Scott on Twitter at ScottColin55, correct?
Yes, sir.
Give Scott a follow. He's fantastic. And someone's tweeting at us this week. They really enjoy Scott on Twitter more than the podcast. And I took full responsibility for that because I just mean I'm limiting Scott's potential.
No, you're fine.
I think I found that people don't like me. Is what it comes down
to. It's amazing. I'll have people say that I'm, you know, I doo-doo on everything. And then I'll have people say I'm a homer and I'm, you know, and I don't know.
That means you're doing it right. I get the same stuff. It's like, you're so negative. And then the podcast is like, you guys are so solid. I'm like, all right, well, I'm one of those two things. Yeah. I will always lean negative. But with that as the backdrop, I was really positive on this podcast. So if you think I'm normally negative, the Braves must have had a fantastic week because I'm saying it's good.
Yeah, it was a good week. All good things. with a few exceptions along the way, but good things.
Yeah, all good things except for Sean Newcomb and Joe Simpson. And here we are. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it, man. For everybody else, please subscribe to the podcast. We will have a new show, I guess, in 5 days. And we'll get back to our normal Sunday evening roots here in the near future. So my apologies for waiting until Tuesday night, but I think you guys probably know at this point that it made sense. And we'll see you guys in a few days. Subscribe to the pod. Do all that fun stuff. Check us out for next time.